Amen.
Amen.
Mel, come up here for a second. You know how to do the floss, right?
No.
I'm just kidding.
You didn't think of any Fortnite dances. We're done.
No Fortnite?
No.
Okay, what dances will you do?
Do this.
Hey, that's pretty good. All right. No, how old are you?
14.
14 years old?
Yeah.
Do you have any problem looking in the camera?
No.
Saying hi?
Hello.
How good is that? Isn't that neat? 14 years old. Do you remember what your prophecy was about?
No.
Isn't that cool? You don't remember what you even said?
No.
Isn't that wonderful? How wonderful is that? How many times have we had that? Or you even do a teaching, and somebody brings up something you said, I go, I said that? So you did, huh? I think I relayed that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. You said, look into the little things. And so here's the creator of the universe about the teaching tonight. Working through a 14-year-old. You know what? Do you feel like prophesying all the time?
No, I wasn't going to tonight.
Okay, why did you?
Because I have to.
Why?
Because he always says to.
He says to. 1 Corinthians 14:39. I don't feel like it. Good job. Good job. Great job. That's for all the kids. Elijah, you're very good at manifesting.
Yeah.
Also. And it's great that you do tongues and interpretation, because there's a lot of adults that do prophecy and tongues. But tongues and interpretation is like a whole other area that they're waiting for something to happen. And they see a kid do it. Yeah. Not to exalt us, but to say, this is going to be a final examination. What did you do? And so, but you know, looking into the small things, into the little things. And tonight, the teaching is going to be looking into the little things. It's like two words. And it's going to be a lot more than just two words. But it's going to be on two words. The Hebrew words is tohu bohu. Easy to remember. Like toh, then W-H-O, who, then Bo, like the name, then W-H-O is how you pronounce it. And I got the pronunciation from Blue Letter Bible. What you can do is you can type in H-8414, that's Tohu, H-8414, or Bohu, H-0922. They'll tell you how to pronounce these things. Thank you, Dad, for showing that. And thank you for telling me that worker's worthy of his wage. So I made a contribution, too. They just showed me how to do that. I sent $20. Yeah, that's... Yeah, who else can tell you how to pronounce the Hebrew? I don't know. Turn to Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. And kind of the title of the teaching is going to be the first rebellion. The first rebellion. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. And so we're going to be looking at out of the Rotherham Emphasized Bible. This is my own customized cover. And it's got a misprint down here. I didn't check my homework. My dad asked me what I wanted on the front of my Bible. I said, I want the truth will make you free. John 8:23. And you can just write down what you want. So I wrote it down. But I got my book back. And the truth will make you free. Wait a minute. It's supposed to be 8:32. But it's a valuable misprint to me. Check your homework. No, but here's a Rotherham Bible. And what he and E.W. Bullinger did, for the most part, their objective was not to tell people what they wanted to hear. It was to tell you what the author wrote to us. And so Genesis chapter 1 verse 2, you wouldn't see, and first, what is the name of this book? Did anybody know besides Dad? Huh?
The beginning.
Yeah, can anybody say it?
In Hebrew?
Genesis.
It's Barashith. So I got to, you know, the Barashith Bara Elohim et Hashamayim va'et Haaretz. I looked up her Hebrew prayers, and here's this woman. She's a Christian. She's a Jew. And she'll do, here's on the YouTube. I forgot who she is. She'll teach you how to say Hebrew. Now, how do you use that? I'm going to, and what I just repeated was Genesis 1:1, to my understanding, not to a Hebrew speaking person, but the name of the book is Barashit, which means in the beginning. Genesis was given by the Greeks when they translated into the Septuagint, I believe. What is. Okay, before we go here, 1 John, it says, God is, and in him there is no darkness. God is
light.
And in him is no darkness, right? Okay, remember that. And would somebody read, Dad, would you read 1 and 2? And that's going to be
the King James.
King James first.
Whole King James.
In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep.
Okay, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and Dad pointed this out. You got a serious problem right here. God is light, and in Him is no darkness. How do you start off with darkness?
Yeah.
But if you're reading the King James or any regular translation, you're not going to see any problems here. And then what will happen is, since people have bad translations, or they don't know they have bad translations, and some of them are not even translations, they're paraphrasing, people are making stuff up, they're interpretations. Now, would somebody read the Rotherham?
In the beginning, Elohim created... Elohim created the heavens and the earth. Continue.
Verse 2.
Now the earth had become waste and wild, and darkness was on the face of the world.
What he will say, Rotherham is going to say the earth became waste and wild. In the beginning, 1-1, there was Elohim, it'd be Yahweh, by himself. He has no beginning, no end. Okay, we can't understand him. Everything started with him. He started everything. Verse 2, it said, it became waste and wild. And Rotherham will say that. E.W. Bullinger's footnote, I highlighted it, Dad. What does it say?
The word then was, or the word became?
The word became.
Okay, was equals became. It's in Genesis, and it gives you all the listings. And all the same Hebrew word also rendered came to pass, and also rendered to become.
And so there's going to be a common knowledge if you could read the ancient Hebrew, and if you weren't trying to tell people what they wanted to hear, like most translators, they're going to say, yeah, the word is tohu bohu. What is tohu bohu?
Was is not tohu bohu.
Form and void.
The words we're talking about is tohu bohu. Is where we're going to go. And so, so here's going to be the word tohu, 84:14. What is this word? This is through the theological word book of the Old Testament. This word, confusion, the empty place, nothing, not vain, vanity, waste, wilderness, without form. So the wilderness and the waste is going to be the big one. We're going to show some other usages of the word. If you want to know what the words mean, look how the author uses those words. Have you ever met somebody who says, I love you to everything and everybody? Look how they use that word. Now, there's some people that never say, I love you. But when they do say it, you can say, how do you use this word? It'll tell you a lot about the person. Somebody could say another word like, I can't think of any good excuse or reason, but I hate. You say that word a lot. So it doesn't mean a whole lot. It could be. But how does Yahweh, we'll look at how Yahweh uses the word tohu and bohu. And you're going to find out a lot of it's going to be waste and wild. In Psalms or Isaiah 24:10, it's used to illustrate a destroyed city. That's different than starting off with a vacuum. A city that had become destroyed. Also, Isaiah 34:11, it's going to say a moral, spiritual emptiness, confusion. And then according to the usage of the author, this word tohu is, of these cases, tohu has a negative, it's going to say almost, in most, if not all cases, in the Hebrew Scriptures, it's negative. Now it's used with this word bohu. Well, no, I'm going to keep going on with tohu, so I'm not going to read all of the theological words. Listen, these 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs is one word in the Hebrew. Isn't that neat? And so, remember she said, look in the little places? We're looking at two words. Then it's going to go on to say Isaiah 45:18 says that Yahweh did not create anything tohu. We'll turn there to Isaiah 45:18. So some people say, well, it's debatable. It could be without form and void. It's not waste and wild. It's debatable. And we go, and sometimes people are holding on to things because they're comfortable. I've been that way, right? My dad first told me there's a name called Yahweh. It was very uncomfortable, and I didn't want to change. So you'll see other people. They're going to say, is it waste and wild? And
can you give me that chapter again?
Isaiah 45:18. $6.91. While you're turning there, I'm going to read some other things. Here's what Rotherham. Rotherham, at the beginning of his, this is my own, Rotherham, what he did in one generation is incredible. But how he started Genesis is, it reminds me of E.W. Bolinger. Here's some of the words he's going to show. You guys keep your spot. If you go back to the beginning, here's a different word. Footnote C in Genesis, the word created. Elohim created. Here's Rotherham going to teach you about this one word, created. And this is a segue. Chasing rabbits, his dad would say. This word is to cut or carve, hence form or create. Then he's going to go on, his footnotes going, not necessarily to make out of nothing. Okay, think about the Grand Cayman, or not Grand Cayman, that's a small island, the Grand Canyon. Think about, I got Ansel Adams and, you know, I got Yosemite and all this stuff. So this word starts off with, it's not necessarily what we understand with create. It could have been he carved something. So what does that mean? I don't necessarily know. But it should be food for thought. He's also going to say in his footnote, Rotherham, E, on Tohu Va Bohu, he's going to show the two words only occur together in Isaiah 34:11 and Jeremiah 4:23. Well, there's only three usages like this. It's very important. You know, I was trying to get your attention. We're supposed to... let's see here. Remember, Jesus Christ taught in parables, and Peter said, will you please explain these parables? He goes, I teach in parables because I don't want anybody to know what I'm talking about. You've got to work at it. You've got to grow up. Well, we don't want to grow up. Well, then stay babes. But here's Jesus Christ. Yahweh's getting people to grow up. And here's Yahweh with his words. He gave us E.W. Bull. He gave us Rothman's dad's teachings for us to grow up, to get a chance to earn something, level up. But he's going to say, the Tohu Vo Va Bohu. Let's see here. There are examples which favor the conclusion that here also, he's talking about Jeremiah 4:23, they describe the result of a previous overthrow. So we're gonna go there in just a second. Tohu Va Bohu means there was a rebellion or an overthrow. Isaiah, would somebody read 45:18?
For thus saith Yahweh, who created the heavens, Elohim himself, who fashioned the earth, and made it himself, established it. Not a waste created he it, to be dealt in he fashioned it. I am Yahweh, and there is none else.
And it specifically said he did not create it, Tohu. He did not create it, or if it was void or waste, he didn't create Tohu. That's not how he did it. To debunk, well, it's not debatable. He specifically says he didn't do it. Now we're looking at the word bohu. Bohu. This is going to be, let's see here. And so, let's see. It describes a primordial condition of the earth, void at the beginning of creation, made empty or God's judgment. But really, the teaching is going to be the two used together. And the two used together will also turn to, let's see here. Isaiah 34:11. And so you'll see in Isaiah 45:18, Yahweh did not create anything, tohu. Now we're going to use the look at usages where the tohu and the... And it's not spelled bohu. That's how it's pronounced. It's like bo with a V, but it's pronounced with... it sounds like a B to me anyways. And how Yahweh uses these words. And before we go there, one of these guys explains... They'll explain... You guys, are you familiar with the word chaos? Mm-hmm. What chaos is? What's chaos?
Complete.
No organization. Complete lack of organization.
Yeah, just. And it goes, Yahweh did not create things in chaos. This is one of these guys also explains. If you understand these words, Tohu and Bohu, he didn't start off with chaos. But if you have a regular translation, it just looks like without form and void. I never thought about it. The dad brought it up. I didn't even think about it. Now, where are we? 34:11, 6:78. So we're going to look at two different usages of Tohu Bohu. And Before we read it, Mom, would you read the footnote above verse 34? So you can kind of get an idea what we're getting ready to read, or Dad?
The heading.
Oh,
the anger.
Yeah, go ahead, Dad.
The divine anger against all nation falls on Edom. The ransom of Yahweh is returned to Zion.
Yahweh is anger. Angry. The divine anger.
That's got to be.
Why is he angry? Can anybody guess?
Breaking his covenant.
Yeah, rebellion. Rebellion. So what is the context here? Rebellion. How many people here have rebelled?
Yeah.
I still rebel. Anytime I don't even want to sing sometimes a fellowship or whatever. Or sometimes I don't want to speak in tongues for people or whatever it is. You're going to go. Love your neighbor as yourself. Pray for your enemies. That could be a tough one. But here it is. We're going to look at the word tohu bohu. And verse 11 is going to be another one of the usage of what the King James would say, waste and wild. Elijah, would you read verse 11 for me?
Yes. That the vomiting pelican and the bittern may possess it, and the great owl and the raven dwell therein. Then will he stretch out over it the line of desolation and the plummet of emptiness.
See the footnote above desolation and emptiness, C and D? Mm-hmm. Okay, go down to the footnote at the very bottom of the page. What does it say in C and D?
Tohu and bohu.
Yeah. So what's going to happen to this, to Yahweh's people who are rebelling against him? What's going to happen? Or is that going to be witness or what's going to happen? Yeah. He's going to stretch out over the line of desolations, but it is the result, this chaos of rebellion. Now we'll turn to Jeremiah 7:17.
Jeremiah what?
Page 717, I forgot to write the, I think it's 4. It's Jeremiah 4. and so this is what really actually stirred up the whole teaching. Like that's just the teaching. Every once in a while, Yahweh's calling you into something, and it's like, I can't put the fire out. And things really started turning, at least for me. And before we read this, you have a context. Elijah, would you read above verse 3? See that stuff in italicized is going to give us an idea of what's going on right here.
Against Judah and Jerusalem, I can't talk, sorry. An invasion is threatened to the anguish of the tender-hearted prophet, who assuredly must be so, pictures the scene of devastation in language of great beauty. Rejected by her paramours, the forsaken one makes bitter outcry.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much. Would you read one more for me? On the page before it, let's see, chapter 3, the italicized right above verse 6.
Treacherous Judah put to shame as a worse offender than apostate Israel. The latter encouraged to return to Zion along with Judah, or to the abolished nations gathered, spirit of adoption bestowed.
Yeah, and so in Jeremiah, you get to see how evil Yahweh's people have become. Not just evil, these are the priests. And in one of these, Israel, would you read, or I guess you don't have the footnote. Elijah, would you read the italicized above verse 5?
In which chapter?
Chapter 5.
Yeah, chapter 5, right above it. It says, one right doer. Here's Yahweh looking for one right doer in Israel.
One right doer might have saved Jerusalem, but no, poor and rich alike are corrupt. Prophets, priests, and people. The end must come, but not an utter end.
Whose fault is this?
People.
There's freedom of will. Is this Yahweh's fault?
Mm-mm.
Is it his desire?
No.
The waste and the... So we read in Isaiah, it was the result of rebellion. You want to know Yahweh? You want to know Yahweh? Look at his son, Jesus Christ. You want to know what his will is? Look what this guy did. Anyway, but he wasn't a sissy. He threw over tables too. And he got right in front of the religious people in seminary. You brood of vipers?
Yeah.
Don't offend our traditions! And if you said anything about washed hands in the Sabbath, guess what happened? They're out. If you say anything about the Trinity today, guess what happens? Whoop, 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 don't say anything about that word. That's our tradition. If you say, talk to any pastor, talk, you say, would you say, let's just talk about the word Trinity. Did it ever occur in the Bible? No. They're going, you are treading on. There's Jesus Christ time is the same thing with their traditions in Matthew 15. Here's Matthew 15. They go, you are transgressing our traditions. And Jesus Christ was not there to get along with everybody. He wasn't a hippie. He wasn't New Age. He was there to stir things up, to give people a choice to go, your life, my life, is this long, it's a vapor, and you're going to go before the judge. What did you do with it? And the rest of your life, existence, imagine your job for 1,000,000 years. You can't do that. I can't even. How about 200 years? The same job. Man, where are you going? And his disciples, and think about that. James and John got named the Sons of Thunder. Whew. And so that's what he was doing. But if you want to know Jesus Christ or Yahweh, look at what he did with his son Jesus Christ. Now I turn to I guess we didn't read verse 17 of chapter 4. I guess we're going back to what I'm trying to show as a context before we read Tohu Bohu. The end of verse 17b starts off with 4. For against me has she rebelled, declareth Yahweh. Then we go down to verse 22. Surely perverse is my people. Me have they not known. Foolish sons they are. Now we go down to verse 23, and we're going to see the word tohu bohu. I beheld the earth, and lo, it was waste and wild. Where have we read that before? Genesis 1-2. The heavens also and their light was not. What happened in Genesis 1-2? It was a rebellion. It was some sort of rebellion. What rebellion was it? And so I used to, and when we look at Isaiah, we look at Jeremiah, and Yahweh doesn't go into great detail. But he also doesn't tell us the name of the adversary either. Right? What is it? None of your business. They don't get any print in my Bible. No print. They got dealt with. What's also that's really interesting with that first rebellion that I used to think one way until Dad pointed out that's in Genesis 1-2. There's a rebellion, right? Mm-hmm. We got that. Established that. When did Satan get cursed to have his head crushed? What chapter is that?
1?
3. Chapter 3. Wait a minute. Because for a long time I've known about the rebellion in Genesis 1-2. But wait a minute, Satan's doom wasn't sealed until Genesis 3? What in the world's going on here? And I used to also think, because this is how people argue, if you serve a righteous God, why would he put a serpent in the garden to tempt them? Well, wait a minute, Satan hadn't turned, as far as we know, until Genesis 3. I didn't know that until last week. I never heard anybody bring that up until Dad was doing a teaching. But then... And Dad said it could have been that Satan was part of the rebellion in Genesis 1-2, but maybe he cleaned himself up. And Dad pointed out that in Genesis 3, Adam and Eve were cursed, but they still had a chance. It could have been that this was the adversary's second chance. That's it, you're done. Going to go. We're just talking about the beginning, Genesis 1-2. You're going to go, what is this? I'd like to think about... a private zoo. Here's a righteous zoo owner, the collectivist. I used to live by a private zoo. I had monkeys, and before I used to hear monkeys when I would mow the lawn. I didn't tell anybody because I thought I was going crazy. I'd be changing the grass. I go, and I'm like, nobody's going to believe me, so I didn't say that. And I didn't hear it all the time, but every once in a while, I'm like, I was like, until a couple years later when I was driving down the road and I almost wrecked because I saw a giraffe. Ah! I was talking to Uncle Tim on the phone. There was a private zoo there. Didn't even know about it. Now it's whatever is it called? Tanganyika. Yeah. The Tanganyika. But the thing is, imagine a perfect zoo. A righteous owner. He's got specimens, all kinds of specimens. The best lion, snow leopards, birds, plants. Think about penguins, specimens, not just animals. Beautiful. And think about all kinds of botany, trees, and who here likes flowers? I'm starting to like flowers. I didn't really plant anything, but I'm looking at flowers out here. And go, this is beautiful. I got the resurrected rose over here, kind of. I was so excited, I almost cut half my tree down because it wasn't getting enough light. And I go, do I kill my tree for a rose bush? Well, it's almost dying anyways, but I was going to rescue this rose. But anyways, imagine perfect flowers and this and that. And the father says to his kids, here's the keys. I'll be back. You're in charge. Father comes back. They had unlocked everything. Everything's let loose. In the zoo, lions are eating gazelles. Lions are eating zebras. A tiger is eating a lion. The elephants have gotten out and smashed all the penguins. Smashed all the trees. There's been fights. And then some of the employees have got out guns and shot some of the animals in self-defense. You know what that is?
Chaos.
That's chaos. See, in the beginning, Yahweh created the heavens and the earth. There is some sort of rebellion that happened in Genesis 1 and 2. And we don't know, but He does leave us prints and hints, like a treasure chest. But then with Garden of Eden, it's called an enclosure, or Garden of Delights. And what did Adam and Eve do? They rebelled again. So Adam chose his wife. His wife got deceived, and Adam chose his wife over Yahweh. Turn to Matthew chapter 21. And if somebody wouldn't mind reading the parable 33 through 41, and you guys can take turns reading.
Chapter 21, did you say?
Yeah, page 23 in the Greek manuscripts. Chapter 21, Mom, would you read that?
And when they drew near unto Jerusalem and came unto Bethpage, unto the Mount of Olives, then Yahshua sent forth two disciples, saying unto them, be going into the village, the silver against you, and straightway you'll find an ass bound and a colt with her. Loose them and lead them unto me. And if anyone unto you say aught, ye shall say, their Lord hath need. Straightway he will send them. But this hath come to pass, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken through the prophet, saying, tell ye the daughter of Zion, lo, thy king is coming unto thee, meek and mounted upon an ass, and upon a colt the foal of a toiling ass. And the disciples went and did as Yahushua directed them, and led the ass and the colt.
One second, I think I was trying to multitask. I think I had to read you the wrong one. I said Matthew?
Mm-hmm. 21. Yeah, it's on page 22.
You said 21, but you said page 23.
I bet you that was it.
So what are we reading about?
The fruits of the vineyard's demanding.
That's verse 33 of chapter 21.
Okay. 23. Is that not what I said?
No.
Okay. You said page 23. You didn't say
you
that.
You didn't say that. Yeah, I've been looking for it.
Verse 33 is right where the...
Yeah, okay. Would you start reading there, Tim?
Mm-hmm. 33?
33. To 41.
Okay, 21, 33. Another parable, hear ye. A man there was a householder who planted a vineyard and a wall around it placed, and digged in it a wine vat and built a tower and let it out to a husbandman and left home. And when the season of fruits drew near, he sent forth his servants unto the husbandmen to receive his fruits. And the husbandmen, taking his servants, one indeed they beat, and another slew, and another stoned. Again sent forth other servants more than the first, and they did unto them likewise. Afterwards, however, he sent forth unto them his son, saying, thou wilt pay difference unto my son. But the husbandmen, seeing the son, said among themselves, this is the heir. Come on, let us slay him and have his inheritance. And taking him, they cast him forth outside the vineyard and slew him. When wherefore the master of the vineyard shall come, what will we do unto the husbandmen? They say unto him, miserable man, miserable will we destroy them. He will let out the vineyard of the other husbandmen, who will render unto him the fruits of their seasons. Alas for you, scribes and Pharisees. Did I miss something?
Yeah, I think you turned a page.
41, that was the end.
But that's it. Okay. So Jesus Christ is talking about the owner. What's he going to do when he comes back? And if you keep reading the same account, sorry, I said, let's try to multitask. You know what the conclusion of that parable is? And the chief priests and the Pharisees, hearing this parable, he's like talking right over these people. Took note that concerning them he was speaking and seeking to secure him. My father and I have had that in meetings with Christians and pastors. When we manifest and we get prophecies, some people, instead of being thankful, are envious. Because they're going to go, what's that all about? But that's not the point of the whole thing. But what is it? This is like chaos. And here's Jesus Christ explaining the chaos over and over again. It's kind of the theme here. Kind of like the zookeeper. Okay, we're watching a clip from The Passion that I thought was good about chaos, and not necessarily the chaos. This is actually going to be judgment. So let's see. He's not dead yet.
I love this part.
Me too.
Cheers. In the text with the water coming out, it might have been added, but here is the judgment that Yahweh was gonna, is going to have right after this, because in Luke, let's see here, different ways Yahweh uses judgment is going to be darkness. And Luke chapter 23, verse 44. You guys know what happened next after this?
Right.
You can stand up if you're getting tired. You know, you don't want to be miserable. Yes, if somebody, I mean, if you'd read Luke chapter 23, verse 44, page 89.
It was already about the sixth hour. Darkness came upon the whole land until the ninth hour. The sun failing, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst.
So there was like TikTok. So here, how would, if they did that to your son, how would you be? Now Yahweh is justice, righteousness, has said. And what happens right after this, there's like an eclipse. All the lights go out. Where else did that happen? Exodus chapter 10, verse 21, page 94 in the Hebrew. And what just happened when they murdered his son? Did they have a choice?
Yeah.
God is not in control. Yahweh is not in control. You can't have both. You can't have a God that's in control of everything and free will. Make up your mind. You can't have both. There can't be free will and somebody who's in control of everything.
Yeah.
He gives man freedom of will. Man, how patient is he with us? Golly, but there's a purpose with all of this. We're going someplace. Who wants to go to this kingdom? You know, Dad brought that up too. It's not just about getting people saved. Well, are you saved? You're saved? You're saved? No, wait a minute. Let me tell you about the kingdom where we're going. You know, it's going to be, there's no fornication. There's no orgies. There's no stealing. There's no drugs. And some people are like, I don't know if I want to go there. Why would I want to go there? Well, there's justice. There's righteousness. It's going to be the Garden of Eden all over again. Would you like to go? Some people are saying, I don't want to go. But in Exodus chapter 10, verse 21, what's it say above verse 21? What was the ninth plague?
Darkness.
And Mom, would you read verse 21, please?
Then said Yahweh unto Moses, stretch forth thy hand over the heavens, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, and that one may feel the darkness.
One may feel the darkness. What is this? Judgment. It's time to pay the piper. That which you sow, you will reap. Yahweh has given us apps. You get a smartphone. It already comes. You buy an iPhone. Do you have to put Siri on there? It comes with it, right? Yahweh has given us apps. We know that what you sow, you will reap. People will call it karma, whatever they want to call it. We all know that there is a creator also. And all men know there is a hereafter. There's going to be a reckoning for what you do in this life. And darkness here is judgment. And Israel, did they have darkness or was it just Egyptians?
Israel.
And it was so dark they couldn't see their hand from their face. What's the purpose of that? Tick tock. Some people are probably going to turn. And I believe that they're blind. You couldn't see anything. Complete blind. And think about what happened with the homosexuals at Lot's house.
Yeah.
Blind. And what was the purpose of that? To preserve Lot. He was righteous. It does say that in Peter. But maybe it's a chance to get these people. Think about what you're doing. But darkness is used as judgment. What else is used as judgment?
Yeah.
Think of an element.
Light.
Fire.
Fire is one. Water. What happened to Pharaoh?
He drowned.
He drowned.
He wasn't even a part of the... Yahweh washed him and all the chariots. He washed them away. How else did Yahweh judge people with water?
Noah's Ark.
Noah.
The Ark.
Yeah. Yes, there are eight people, and there's something I never considered until Dad did a teaching on it. Dad says something matter-of-factly, and he says a matter-of-fact, and I'm like, actually, there's probably 0.001% chance I would have ever thought what you just thought. But Dad said after the rain, the 40 days of rain, people would have rafts. Right? There were boats that existed. I never thought that. I just thought everybody just doubted it. What would happen to them now? A slow, slow death. What's the purpose? Not necessarily their death, but prolonging their life. You got a choice. You got a choice. You got a choice. And these people would have had a choice. Still. And that's our long-suffering Father. But what does he do with water? He is judgment. Also with darkness, judgment. We know that with Tohu Bohu, he doesn't start off with chaos. He doesn't make anything waste and wild. But the waste and the wild, when they're used together, what is it? Is it a consequence of him?
No.
It's a consequence of freedom of will. And all of us have done it too, not to these extents. They got to go freedom of will and rebellion. Turn to Genesis, back to chapter 1. We'll wrap up there. I forgot to... Dad, would you go back to E.W. Bollinger's footnote I highlighted?
And you might hit Peter, too, about the world then was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is real important because, you know, I think that's one of my stalwarts. This is real important. There are a lot of Christians who think that their Bible translations aren't important. And those same Christians are trying to convince unbelievers and rejectors of Yahweh that the word is true. Like saying dinosaurs are on the ark. Andrew Womack doesn't know that the woman caught in adultery is not in the text. Is that someone who values Yahweh's word? Mm-hmm. Is he gifted in faith? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Does he love Yahweh's word? No. He doesn't love Yahweh's word. He'll still say, I can do all things through Christ, because that's what it says in the King James. Christ was added to the text. This guy, Andrew Womack, not to pick, I'm just using an example, he does do some very good things. He's trying to convince people why dinosaurs existed with men. Why? Because he's... If he would read E.W. Bollinger, and if he would read Rotherham, if he would humble himself to look what the Hebrew words are, he'd find out there was a rebellion before Adam and Eve. What does E.W. Bollinger, and this is in the early 1900s, I highlighted, what did he say in the highlight?
The world that then was, 2 Peter 3, 5, and 6, creation and eternity past to which all fossils and remains belong.
So what is E.W. Bollinger going to say? In Genesis 1-2, there was a world that then was. Where is that used? He's quoting 2nd, you can turn to 2nd Peter chapter 3. He's going to say, in another book, he's going to talk about a world that then was. He's going to talk about a flood. Well, that's Noah's flood, right? E.W. Bollinger, and Dad pointed that out even today, it's not really, really clear. But there's some things that it's going to say in 2nd Peter. We weren't going to go there, but I'm glad you said that. Because what about the dinosaurs? You know, but it's neat, right? It's really neat right here. I think about this, how it starts chapter 3, verse 5.
Yeah, 5, 6 and 7.
Okay, chapter 3, verse 5. And for this... They willfully forgot. Have you ever done that? I think I did that a lot as a teenager. I remember I ran into a guy who ran with Izzy in high school, and he was wicked, very wicked. He was a lot of fun. I said, didn't you ever worry about your liver? Ah, no, you poop those things out when you turn 20. I'm like, ah, so funny. But you start flirting with things, and then all of a sudden you start willingly forgetting consequences, especially as teenagers. But it says, they willfully forgot. What did they forget? Well, what's something we willfully forget? A judgment. You're going to be judged. We'll be saved, but you will be judged. Oh, remember a guy said that to one of his buddies. You'll be judged. Would you stop? Take that back. For this, they willfully forgot that there was heavens from old and an earth. On account of water, by means of water, compacted by Yahweh's word. By which means the world that then was, with water being flooded, perished. The world that then was perished. Noah didn't perish. The seven with him didn't perish. The animals didn't perish. What's it talking about here? We believe it's talking about Genesis 1-2. While the heavens and the earth that now are, by the same word, have been stored up with fire... There's going to be another judgment. Elias said fire. Being kept unto the day of judgment, destruction of the ungodly men. But this one thing forgot not, beloved, that one day with the Lord is with a thousand... But we keep, I'm going to keep reading. It's as with a thousand years. and 1,000 years as one day. Yahweh is not slack concerning his promises, as some consider slackness, but is long-suffering with regards to you not being minded any should perish. He says that right after what? Judgment, judgment. A world got judged and perished by water. And what we believe is that was Genesis 1-2. Who were they? We don't know. But there was a judgment. He goes, these Hebrews willfully forgot that judgment. Noah, judgment. Sodom and Gomorrah, how were they judged? Fire, judgment. Here's the judgments, and here this is. But it's going to say in Genesis 1-2, here was the world. Here's where dinosaurs were, most likely the best of our ability or our knowledge. And you go back and go, holy moly, that's just Genesis 1-2. I thought one time I went, why did you even create dinosaurs? Because that's what the unbeliever says is proof. There was no Yahweh, because you can't put a brachiosaurus or a brontosaurus on an ark, is what I was thinking. And my dad goes, Yahweh could shrink it this big. Doesn't mean he didn't do it. Can Yahweh shrink something? Yeah, he can make a virgin pregnant. I think he can handle with size.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. He can put an egg in a 90-year-old woman named Sarah to have a baby. You don't have any eggs left at 90, do you?
Nope.
You got one left, it's like a gumbill, so we got one. No. It says that it wasn't by, it's the same way with Abraham. But here's the thing, I forgot where I was going. In Genesis 1-2, in the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth had become waste and wild, tohu bohu, and darkness was on the face of the roaring deep. What happens if water has no heat?
It's very cold.
Is it cold?
Yes.
If there's no light at all,
yeah.
What happens?
Freezes.
What happens to the water in the Arctic? Yahweh flooded the earth sometime in Genesis 1-2. It started with Yahweh. A rebellion happened in Genesis 1-2. Yahweh flooded. We take this and the waste of the wild, the rebellion that happened, the chaos that broke out. Yahweh judged it with water. Then what happened? Yahweh is light. In him there is no darkness. Everything's completely frozen. The water wouldn't kill all the sea creatures, but you freeze everything solid, everything's dead. But then Yahweh started right there, but that's just Genesis 1-2. Tohu bohu. I mean, think about usage, usage of the words. The first usage of a word is important to the author.
Yeah.
To the author. Think about Tolkien, who wrote The Hobbit. You start changing words and names, or rearranging things. What would Tolkien do? Don't mess with my work. What would Hamlet or Shakespeare do if you started adjusting? What would Thomas Jefferson do if you started changing the Declaration of Independence? You think he'd be irritated?
A little.
No, if you changed it after he or whoever.
No, but they changed his original stuff. He didn't like it.
But you're going to say, what would you do? The creator of the universe has wrote things and he's given us things if we are seeking, asking, and knocking. And I'd like to change, I'd like to close a little different. Would any of the kids like to have a closing prayer for me instead of me? You don't have to, but I'll do it. Yeah, why don't you come up here? And then why don't you give a prophecy too? That'd be perfect. This is the cameraman. Good.
Thank you, Yahweh, for this wonderful day you've given us. And just thank you for everything you've given to us. And for just for this corona stuff to all be over. And for this beautiful light you've given us. Amen. My children, your life is like a rope. And you're at the very beginning of it, the little red part of this giant rope. My children, you're just looking, you're only looking at the very end of the rope when you have the rest of the rope, my children. You're only looking at this life, my children. Don't always just look at this life, because I have the next life, the eternal, infinite life I have given you. So, my children, don't always look at this life. Amen.
Amen. Great job, Isaiah. Oh, I hope you're on the camera. Oh, man, we should have a cameraman. Excellent job, guys.
Like Chuck and Aaron.